My name is Mark Edwards, and this is the Boss It Podcast. I've got an interesting guest today, Mark Hirschberg, but before I introduce him, I just wanted to talk a little bit about why I first started Boss It and what I hope it will deliver for you, not just in the past, but also now we are into season three. For me personally, it's been a way that I can reach out and talk to some really interesting people, and I think from that objective, it's really achieved its goal. I always like to be talking to new people, people with perhaps different perspectives to my own, because that gives you the opportunity, gives me the opportunity to be able to learn. But I think I also want to be able to have a podcast that talks to a particular audience, and that audience is C-suite executives within the software sector. I think there are a few other podcasts out there, but I think with my background, I don't think there's anybody else doing it with an M&A background who also does strategic positioning on an international basis. So that gives me something unique. Whether that's particularly valuable to you, I don't know. Let me know. But I'm always interested in feedback, and especially now since we're starting season three. I'm also looking for some really good guests who have got a story to tell. So if you are a C-suite executive, you've worked in the software industry for a long time, or maybe you're new and you feel that you've got a good story to tell, then reach out to me. I'd really like to hear from you. And also, if you've been listening to this podcast or for a long time or maybe a short time, and again, you want to give me some feedback, perhaps you don't like it, perhaps you think that there is some improvements or there are some areas that you would like me to cover. Again, really welcome hearing that feedback. I have been getting some really good feedback recently, and that's been great as we design the upcoming podcast for season three. So, introduction done. Now over to speak to Mark Hirschberg. I said to him, I know that he's a very accomplished podcaster. He's been on over 180 podcasts. He's been in the software sector for quite some time, predominantly as a CTO, is my understanding, but we'll find out a little bit more about that. But I've said to him, this is going to be the best podcast he's been on so far, by far. So it's quite a challenge that I've set. Mark, welcome to Boss It Podcast. Perhaps give us a 30-second intro before I really start challenging you with some questions.
Sure. I'm looking forward to the best podcast episode ever. My background, I came out of MIT in the 90s, began as a software developer during the dot-com era, and moved up and became a CTO. I've been a CTO at a number of tech startups, helped a couple of Fortune 500s who wanted to play startup. I've also had a parallel career where I recognize the skills that we need to be a successful executive: leadership, communications, negotiation, networking. These are skills we're never taught. And so I wound up teaching them at MIT for the past 20 years. I now turned it into my book. And so I have a parallel career. I'm still a CTO. I do a lot of fractional CTO work these days, but I have a parallel career also teaching these skills at universities, at businesses, and elsewhere.
Super. Good intro. You're doing well so far. Now, I'd like to ask you some questions around what are the lessons that you've learned? So if you were sitting down with somebody that was about to enter the software sector, maybe as a CTO, maybe as a CEO, what would be the first thing that you would say to them? Something that you've learned from your own practical experience.
The best insight I got in my career came from the book PeopleWare by Tom DeMarco and Timothy Lister. And the essence of that book is that most software projects fail. They don't fail because of technological reasons. They fail because of sociological reasons. It's not that you need a PhD to get this done and you didn't have one. It's because your team didn't talk to each other and plan and communicate well, and you screwed up the process and the people side of it. And I was lucky to learn that early in my career. I think that helped put me on the path and led to some of what I've done and some of the successes I've had.
That's interesting. My observation has been that early on, and I've been in the software sector for quite some time, that there was a degree of hunger for software when businesses started to see that software could help them, as they perceived it at that time, run a more efficient business, be more successful. There was a hunger, and there probably was a shortage of technical people. But we've long been through that period. There's now, you know, it created a lot of perhaps cynical bias, because it's not easy, A, to write great software, but to implement it in the right way. So bearing that in mind, Is it a communication issue that we're talking about with amongst the development team, but also with the client or with the end user, or is it something else?
It can be all of that and more. Certainly, we do have problems within our teams of miscommunication. Oh, I didn't realize that's what you meant. Mm. We walked out of the meeting thinking we're doing something completely different and go in different directions. Mm. We know we have that problem with the customer, whether a customer is internal or external. Customer says, I want X, I want Y. They just don't know how to describe why. Also see issues of internal politics within companies. We see muddled communications. We see people who are trying to negotiate with each other, but not effectively. And negotiations, by the way, we negotiate more often with our coworkers than with other people, unless you happen to be in sales or business development. But if you don't know how to negotiate effectively, you don't get good outcomes. And these are your teammates. You want to get good outcomes. So all these skills together, they just put a little bit of almost a tax on our projects, right? Bad communications maybe just slows us down 2%, but then bad leadership slows us another 3% and another and another, and you add it all up and suddenly we're way behind schedule. Suddenly we're not producing software as well as we could have.
So how do you kick off a project to overcome some of those issues? Let's start with communication. You're starting a new project. You've got a really good opportunity in front of you. You believe you have the right team. What's the first thing you're going to do?
There are two important things. One is to set the overarching goals. Okay, we know we're building software that's managing some supply chain. Fine. But what is the goal of this? Are we trying to be in this space the cheapest software? Are we trying to be the most efficient software, the most flexible software? Because you could be any of these things, but you can't be all. And if, as we're doing a particular feature, someone's saying, you know, I know we got to keep the software low cost, so I'm just going to do a, it's good enough, it's not great, but this is keeping the cost down. Someone else is saying, well, I'm going to give them lots of different options. This is going to be costly, but it's going to be really flexible. Now I have a system that's not super cheap, not super flexible. It's a little of each, but not hitting our goal. So I start with first principles. What is it we're really trying to achieve? What's that kind of 30,000 foot goal in the space? Not just what it is, but the positioning of it. Mm. The other thing I do is within the team, I make sure we have a clear process. How is it we are going to work together? What is, and it's not just, oh, we're agile. Okay, let's have scrum meetings at the start of, you know, every 2 week cycle. Sure, we have that. But let's also be clear, what happens when there's an issue? How do you raise that to me? How do you raise that to your teammates? Where do we use Slack versus email versus a meeting? Mm. This is too easy just to throw information out in the ether. Let's be clear on how we're doing this.
Yes. I think that's very important. It's overcoming through experience some of those potential issues before they arise.
One of my favorites, definition of done, because how many times has a software engineer said, oh, I'm done with that? Okay, what does it mean that you're done with it? Does that mean you've written the code and that's it? Does that mean you've written the code and documented it? You've written, documented, and tested the code? Does that mean it's been integrated into the main branch? Does that mean it's on QA? Does it mean it's through QA? Done can mean any and all of this.
Yes.
And if we don't have a common definition, if what you say is done is different than what I think is done, that's a problem. I almost always define, this is when we say done, this is what we mean. You can say it's code complete, it's ready for test, done with testing, but don't say done, or if you do, this is what it means.
That's a good example. I was thinking it could mean I'm done with this and I'm out of here.
Could be that too.
Tell me something else that comes to mind as to things that you've learned in your career.
Companies often get wrong. They build the software before they've defined the process.
Oh, yes. I agree with that 100%.
And once you build the code, things are starting to calcify. Things are getting harder to change in the future. I always say to companies, let's do it on paper first. Let's just, if we need to hire, especially if a company is trying to do new things, if we need to hire some extra bodies temporarily, do it, have them work through the process and say, we should do this in four steps, not three, because here's what happens, right? Or we need to have these extra checks along the way. Let's be clear about that. And humans can figure this out quickly and in real time. Then we can define the process and now we can code it up. But too many companies want to jump just to the software. And unfortunately, I think that gets them into trouble.
Yes, I think that obviously if you're a developer and you've got coding skills, you enjoy that process, or you should do, and they want to get straight to it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to come to the right product at the end of that without a lot of careful thought and planning. What about user interface? Because this is something I see a lot of software demonstrations. I see a lot of software every week. I probably see a few. I've had two demonstrations of software today. I must admit, it's not something I look forward to. Every software company I think I've spoken to has said our interface is great, or we know it's not great, but we're working on it. Very few are great. What makes a great interface?
I'm going to share with you a company that does produce great interfaces, Menlo Innovations in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's run by my friend Rich Sheridan. They hire people with anthropology background. So they hire people who have social scientist training, and they are some of their customer interface people and design people. And these folks, when they have a client, they go into the client and they sit down with them. I don't just mean sit in a conference room. They say, go do your work, and I'm going to stand over your shoulder. The same people who may have gone into tribes all around the world to learn about those cultures, they are now ethnographers who are understanding the corporate culture, how you work, what's your process, and then designing interfaces for the way the company works. And that is really a wonderful approach more companies should adopt, recognizing, of course, this isn't cheap, right? There's a cost to this. And if you're doing some $20,000 project, sure, you're not maybe investing in having someone go in for a couple of days to watch. But when you're doing these big projects, go to your client, watch your client, be the fly on the wall, understand how they operate, and build the software that meets their process.
Yeah, great advice. I like that. One question that I ask a lot of people in this sector is artificial intelligence. What does it mean to you? Does it exist? If it does, what do you see as the benefits being?
AI in the general world, I know you tend to have a technical audience, and we use in the general world, I think it gets abused along with AI, ML, blockchain, data science. Yes. Now, I remember taking my AI classes back at MIT, and really, AI, you can define AI as simple as three lines of code. I mean, if statement technically qualifies as a type of AI. So we can really apply this very broadly. And I think it gets overused. Certainly now we think a little more about machine learning models. We think about, and there's hundreds of models you can choose from, and taking that data set and training on it. And sure, I'd say that's some AI, if you want to call it that. And your marketing people are probably more excited to call it that than you are. It does get overhyped. I've seen a lot of companies lately who say, we need AI because everyone else has it. And the CEO, you get the headline motivation. Well, you know, the Wall Street Journal says, if you don't have AI, you're not competing. Okay, how do we get AI? You know, we're a dog food company. Yeah, it's not really what we're about. No, but we got to do, you know, AI to make us the AI-enabled dog food company. All right, fine. Put in the if statement, call it AI.
Yes.
I think general AI is overhyped, right? That general intelligence, I think we're a long way off from there, further than most people think. But in the short term, expert systems, certainly we see, right? There's a reason we've beaten chess, we'll eventually beat Go. We can see expert systems just doing knowledge and pattern recognition, but true intelligence, true innovation, that I think we're going to, it's going to be a while before we get that. And let me note, you know, people say, well, look, they're composing music, right? And we have algorithms that are making these beautiful paintings. That's still pattern recognition, just writ large, where you get the real insights of someone just seeing something in a whole new way. I think we're a long way off from that.
That's a good answer. I said to you at the beginning that I might challenge you. I won't be challenging you on that interpretation. I think that's one of the best that I've heard. Robotic process automation. What are your thoughts about that? RPA. That's, again, is something that's being pushed for a few years now, I guess, by marketing companies. We've seen some companies grow very, very quickly on the back of that, UiPath being one of them. What are your thoughts around RPA?
I'm a big fan of it. But here's the thing, I'm going to broaden it. So not just physical robotic, but just automation of any task. Yes. Because we are talking about what's this going to do. We've seen the reports, X percent of jobs are at risk. Everything yes. from rideshare drivers to burger flippers to even lawyers and editors and writers. This is not a problem. We should keep doing this. I am glad that, you know, we don't have travel agents anymore because I can just book online. I don't have to sit there on the phone and figure things out. I have all these great interfaces. I can plan myself faster and more efficiently. We are better off automating tasks. Our life has always been automating the rote tasks to make them cheaper. And then we can focus on the higher level stuff. And you say, oh, but what's happening, you know, to lawyers? They're highly skilled people. Well, sure, but the lawyers spend a lot of their times looking for the right prior case law. They spend a lot of time proofreading over contracts and redlining it. If you can automate away that work, then they can focus on your case strategy. They can focus on higher order things. That's what we all do. There's a reason as a software developer, I'm not writing unit test cases. They get automatically generated for me. Great. If you think I'm writing unit test cases is my value, I haven't delivered that right. So I think this is a good thing, but here's the catch. When we've had this type of disruption in the past, it has been over larger generations. The example I often cite, let's take the farm industry. In the United States, we went from 75% farmers to 25% farmers over 100 years. And during that time, people started going into the factories, they left the family farms, but that's 100 years. You could say, okay, kids, I'm a farmer, but you should go do something else. They're talking about replacing rideshare drivers over a period of about 3 years, that whenever it finally hits in about 3 years, we're going to replace 90, 100% of them, and millions of people will suddenly be displaced in a short period. So with all this automation, we as a society need to recognize there is massive acute displacement. And we need to invest in reskilling the labor force to get them into other areas, or we're going to have a large drain on our economy and general unrest. So I am all for it, but we have to recognize societally, we have to prepare and address it.
Yes, it's about the rate of change, and it's about our ability to be able to adapt and prepare for that change. I think that's very important. How much part have you played previously in the organizations that you've worked in? Because we mentioned about marketing. And I think that many years ago, there was a disconnect between marketing and sales, and there was sometimes friction. I think to a greater extent, that's gone away, although it can still exist. But definitely, there is maybe a lack of confidence. Perhaps sometimes I speak to quite a lot of technical people. I speak to a lot of marketing people. They're a little bit on at different ends of the communication barrier. How much have you been involved previously within marketing and marketing processes? And how much do you think that technical teams should be in communication with marketing teams?
I spend a lot of time in it. Now, I've been a CTO at marketing companies, at lead generation companies, at ad tech companies, at media companies, but I've also been very actively engaged. In addition to product engineering, which you would expect for CTO, the other two areas I've really focused on, HR, because I do a lot of recruiting and retention, and marketing's the other area. And, you know, when you look at why there is this disconnect, it tends to come from one of two things. Either is a language differentiator. The fact is, all of us have our own language. Now, in technology, we especially have languages. We use terms like AI and the cloud and blockchain, and we know what these mean. Other people don't. So we need to make sure we can speak other languages. This isn't true just for technical people. I actually talk about how everyone has their own language and mental models, and we need to learn to be more multi-fluent. So that's going to bridge some of the gap. The other challenge comes from how the business is structured. Where is marketing? Is marketing under sales or is sales under marketing? Is product under marketing or marketing under product? Where's engineering in relation to product? Depending on how your organization is set up, you're going to have different structures and different incentives that will either help or hinder the types of conversations you need. And so you need to, as an executive, spend a lot of time thinking about your organizational structure to foster certain types of conversations, thinking, and information flow that's going to lead to the outcomes that you want.
Excellent. You mentioned about recruiting, and that's an important aspect for any business that's wanting to grow. We've seen companies grow at phenomenal rates. I've been tracking those fastest growing companies for sort of over 4 years now. And I know from speaking to some of those companies, one of the biggest problems is recruitment. What have you learned about recruitment?
When I join a company, I tell them, expect it's going to take 30 to 50% of my time, depending on how quickly you're trying to get the team to grow. It is a lot. A couple things I've learned. One, I don't trust most HR people to do technical recruiting. I usually prefer to hire a junior person, someone nearly out of school, and I will train him or her up into how to recruit technical people. I am shocked how many technical recruiters could not tell you the difference between CouchDB and MongoDB and which one is similar to the other versus to MariaDB. They go, I don't know. Yeah, they say they're looking for Couch. I want someone with Couch. Well, okay, this person did Mongo. That's good enough. That's close. They don't put in that extra effort. Like, this is your job, but they really fail. I'm very disappointed in that. The other thing is we talked about marketing and technology. Marketing and HR need to spend more time together. I tell every HR organization, sit down with your marketing people and learn marketing techniques, because in today's hyper-competitive recruiting landscape, you are marketing your product being a job opening. You need to think about as a marketer, whether you're using techniques like retargeting or just how you write compelling job descriptions. Boy, do we get job descriptions wrong. You need to change to do this to be more effective.
What do you do in the interview if you're recruiting quite a senior person within your team and you're going to be interviewing them? What are you looking to do in that interview?
Here, I do have a whole chapter on how to interview in my book. And the reason I put that in is because while there's lots of content for candidates, how do you answer? What are your weaknesses? Okay, great. I can go Google that. We do almost no training for how to hire people. We say, yes. Hey, Mark, great. You're on the team. Glad you're part of the team. We got a candidate come in. Go sit down with him and interview him. Okay, Mark, what do you think of him? We gave you no training. I've talked to executives of senior tech companies. They've had zero interview training. It's insane. So I always train up my teams. I sit down with them. I go through, here's not just the process. Here's how to think about it. Here's the different types of questions you might use. I don't just mean, here's a technical versus non-technical. Are we looking for values? Are we looking for leadership? Are we looking for technical acumen? Let's think about what things we want to find. What are the questions that will elicit it? And make sure you have a clear rubric on what we're hiring for. Because if you're looking for someone who is a stronger leader, and I'm looking for someone who's more technical, again, we're not aligned. And by the way, we need to be very clear, because when we say, well, we need someone who's a good leader in this position, okay, what does that mean? Does that mean a leader who can rah-rah inspire the team? Does that mean a leader who can take us through a complex technical transformation? Is that a leader who knows how to take a team that's demoralized and get them working together? They're all leaders. But we might not need each and every type of that leadership. Let's be clear, what type of leadership are we looking for? So when I see leadership and communication, which I see in just about every job description, let's be clear on what that means so we all have that common definition.
Great answer. I've had a number of podcasts that I've done in the past talking to senior executives about the issues around stress. It seems to be a growing problem, a problem that's bigger. It may be that actually more people are talking about it, which I think is good anyway. What do you do to de-stress? I noticed that you have an interest in ballroom dancing. Is that your way of de-stressing?
Well, I don't compete anymore. I competed throughout my 20s. I'm unfortunately retired. Certainly exercise or fun activities can help. It's a couple different things. I do know what makes me calm, and that might be doing something fun. It might be seeing friends. It might even just be watching TV for a little bit to get my mind off of it. But the important thing is to recognize that awareness in yourself, to recognize when your brain starts to get into the, I'm stressed, I'm tense, I can't not focus on that. Because once you recognize that, you can say, okay, I am going to now address that. And it might be as simple as, I'm going to go watch a TV show for 30 minutes and just get my mind off of it. I'm going to laugh at some jokes on TV, and it puts me in a different mental state. So I think most importantly is recognizing when you get into that state, and then through trial and error, you can figure out what's going to help you de-stress and shift out of it.
How do you overcome what I think a lot of people will feel is that when you're busy and you may be starting to see the signs that you could be stressed, that you're going to actually sort of turn your back on the work for a while, when you're going to, most of my clients, most of the people that I speak to in the software sector are very driven people. They're well-educated, they're intelligent people, but they're also very driven and they will want to achieve and they will feel responsibility. And sometimes they've got to walk away from that. How do you handle that? Or would you advise others to handle that pressure, which means instead of going for a walk or watching that TV program, they're going to go back to their desk?
It's recognizing that you want to win the war, not the battle.
Mm-hmm.
If you're an experienced executive, we've all seen that hero mode. The project is due very soon and you say, I'm going to power through, I'm going to pull the all-nighter, I'm going to work, I'm going to get it done. And that works to some level. If you're on a project to five people, yeah, you might be able to just carry the load the last week, work those 20-hour days and get it done. That doesn't work on a team of 100 people. No way one person is just going to power through it and get it done. And if you do that, you know you're going to burn out and it's going to just be a failure. So it's recognizing the same thing as the leader of the organization, as someone managing more people. Everything you do gets amplified. If you lead us in the right direction, you now have 100 people moving in the right direction. If you take us in the wrong direction, 100 people are going the wrong direction. You're amplifying your decisions. So when you make a decision to say, I'm going to stay stressed, I am going to just sit at my desk, you know that stress is inhibiting your decision-making. Little bit of stress is okay. It can heighten it. But when you're overstressed, your decision-making is inhibited. And now that's going to be amplified because everything you do ripples throughout the company.
Yeah.
So think about that and say, you know what? Even if I need to lose this evening where I really wanted to work, I'm going to lose it. We're going to be a little late on this. I'm going to be calmer the next few days. And that's going to help the whole organization be more effective.
So that links back to that point that you made right at the start, which is to understand in yourself those telltale signs that you're starting to get stressed, that it's going to be counterproductive because that stress is going to slow you down. It could create more long-term problems, but catch it early. So almost have an agreement with yourself is when I start to see those signs, I'm going to stop and I'm going to go and do some ballroom dancing.
Exactly. I recently learned this is what mindfulness seems to focus on. My understanding for the past few years, I thought mindfulness is just a new name for meditation.
Meditation, yes.
But mindfulness apparently is being very conscious of those processes in your brain. And I certainly learned in myself for stress and other triggers. First, I became aware, I'm stressed. Then I start to say, well, what do I think triggered it? How did I get into this? And start to recognize the patterns. It's because this person would start challenging ideas, but throwing out BS reasons, it's fluff, it's BS, it's not technically a sound challenge. I get stressed over that. Okay, now I know the trigger. Now when I'm in that situation, I go, this person's starting to make an argument, but it's hand-wavy. Okay, really, I'm about to get stressed. So either I say, stop, put the brakes on to prevent the stress happening, or when it happens, I would then excuse myself, go to the bathroom for 2 minutes to do the calming so I can walk back in the room. So it begins first with identification, then recognizing, backtracking to get the trigger, and then you can stop it. You can arrest that process earlier and you can address it earlier to prevent yourself going down that path.
Mm. Good advice. For me, it's been building into my structure, my daily, weekly structure, is that I have a period in the morning where I'm exercising. So I go to the gym regularly. And then on top of that, I find that there are times when, despite having that routine, I'm still finding that there is pressure building up and I just need to pick up my camera and I need to go and take my camera for a walk and see what I can find. Because the secret, I think, for me with photography, but it can work with anything, is that it's absorbing. I have to focus. I have to concentrate. And it takes everything else away out of my mind. So in a way, I get that mindfulness. I get that break. It's a bit of a holiday for my mind. That's how I sort of see it.
I found a similar experience. I'm still single and I go on dates. And so sometimes after a stressful day, I used to think, oh, this is going to be a terrible date because I'm going in stress. But what I've learned is because I focus on my date, a few minutes in, I'm focused on her. I'm focused on what's happening in her life. And just like you get absorbed into the photography, I'm now absorbed with whatever's happening with her, gets my mind off it. It shifts my mental state from focused on whatever's causing the stress to something different. So as you point out, it could be anything that just takes your attention somewhere else.
Have you ever had a terrible date and you've just thought, I can't wait to get back to work?
Oh, I've had plenty of those. lots of those. Nothing to do with stress. I'm doing a lot better things instead of sitting here for another 30 minutes just to be polite.
That could be a whole new podcast, couldn't it? We could just go through all of these bad dates you've had and the things that you learned. I can see behind you, you've got your book. What motivated you to write the book?
Having taught these skills for 20 years at MIT, as well as in other organizations and some of the nonprofit work I've done, I knew that I wanted to reach a broader audience with this. Now, I began by thinking, I'm just going to put down some notes and give them to the class. MIT pioneered open courseware. So we'll take these notes, we'll put it online. I've been trying to get MIT for years to expand this program to other universities or even do executive training with it. We just haven't had the time or resources to do it. So I thought I was writing notes and then realized, oh, this is a book. As 20 pages turned into 200, I think this is a book. But I knew I wanted to get this out there because what we've been teaching and what I cover in the book, it's not just for engineers, it's not just for students. These are universal skills, the ones I named before, leadership, networking, negotiation, communication, universal skills that help all of us and all of our organizations be more effective.
Sounds good. Somebody wants to get hold of that book. What's the best way?
You can go to my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com. There you can follow the buy link. It'll take you to Amazon or other places you can buy. You can get in touch with me. You can download the free companion app that goes along with the book. You can also go to the resources page and get great resources online that goes deeper into the content, or a way you can use the book as a training program within your company. That's all completely free. All of this on my website, thecareertoolkitbook.com.
Super. This podcast will be seen by thousands of people within the software sector. What would be the ideal outcome for you? What would people be reaching out to you for that would really fit with your goals? The best outcome, if you like.
Best outcome, go to that resources page, download the Career Toolkit Development Kit, because it's going to teach you how you can train up your entire organization with these skills. You can use my book for it. You can use a different book. You can use a great podcast like this one. The content's less important. If you follow that program, it's completely free. It's going to help your team be more effective. And that's why I wrote the book. That's why I do this, because I want to help organizations be more effective.
Brilliant. Great goal. What's the next big personal goal for you? More ballroom dancing? They fit together well.
they do. Certainly, marriage is probably my biggest personal goal.
Okay.
Professionally, now that the world is opening up again, it'd be nice to do more in-person speaking engagements. I've been doing a lot virtually, but it'll be great just to see faces in person as I do it. So more engagements at companies, conferences, and other types of events.
Okay, that's great. I mean, I've enjoyed talking to you today on this podcast. And when we promote this, we'll have an image of you, and perhaps we could send it out with the message, "This is Mark. Do you fancy getting married? Come listen to this podcast." And we'll push that out for you. Maybe we can achieve that goal.
Feel free.
That's the first time somebody has ever said, "I want to get married," from the podcast. I must admit, but it's a great goal to have. Thank you very much for joining me today. I really enjoyed the call. I think there was lots of useful information, and I will encourage people to go and have a look at your book. I think you've written it for the right reasons, and it's been good fun to have you on.
Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Super. That was the Boss It podcast. And that was Mark Hirschberg. Please, as I said at the start, please do give feedback. And if you've got a great story to tell, come and join me on the podcast. I'd love to hear from you. Until then, keep safe, keep working, keep successful. Thank you very much.